Makersoft Story Classic, bringing to you recordings of old storybooks. Sir Gibby, episode 48, Needful Odds and Ends. It will be plain, from what I have told, that Donald's imagination was full of Ginevra, and his was not an economy whose imagination could enjoy itself without calling the heart to share. At the same time, his being in love, if already I may use concerning him that phrase, so far from obstructing his study, was in reality an aid to his thinking and a spur to excellence. Not excellence over others, but over himself. There were moments, doubtless, long moments too, in which he forgot Homer and Sisera and differential calculus and chemistry for the bonny lady lassie. That was what he caught her to himself. But it was only on emerging from the revere to attack his work with fresh vigor. She was so young, so plainly girlish, that as yet there was no room for dread or jealousy. The feeling in his heart was a kind of gentle angel worship, and he would have turned from the idea of marrying her, if indeed it had ever presented itself as an irreverent thought, which he dared not for a moment be guilty of entertaining. It was besides an idea too absurd to be indulged in by one who, in his wildest imaginations, always, through every protean embodiment, sought and loved and clung to the real. His chief thought was simply to find favor in the eyes of the girl. His ideas hovered about her image, but it was continually to burn themselves in incense to her sweet ladyhood. As often as a song came fluttering in swings at his casement, the next thought was Ginevra, and there would be something to give her. I wonder how many loves of the poets have received their offerings in correspondent fervor. I doubt if Ginevra, though she read them with marvel, was capable of appreciating the worth of Donald's. She was hardly yet woman enough to do them justice, for the heart of a girl, in its very sweetness and vagueness, is ready to admire alike the good and the indifferent, if their outer qualities be similar. It would cause a collapse in many a swelling of poet's heart if, while he heard lovely lips commending his verses, a voice were to whisper in his ear what certain other verses the ladies commended also. On Saturday evenings, after Gibby left him, Donald kept his own private holiday, which consisted in making verses, or rather in setting himself in the position for doing so, when sometimes verses would be the result, sometimes not. When the moon was shining in at the windows of the large room adjoining, he would put out his lamp, open his door, and look from the little chamber, glowing with fair light, into the strange, eerie, silent waste, crowded with the chaos of discreated homes. There are scores on scores of things, many of them unco, that is uncouth, the first meaning of which is unknown, to his eyes stood huddled together in the dim light. The light looked weary and faint, as if with having forced its way through the dust of years on the windows, and Donald felt as if gazing from a clear conscience present out into a faded dream. Sometimes he would leave his nest and walk up and down among spider-legged tables, tall cabinets, secret-looking bureaus, working chairs, yielding himself to his fancies. He was one who needed no opium or such like to set him dreaming. He could dream at his will. Only his dreams were brief and of rapid change, probably not more so after the clock than those other artificial ones, in which to speculate on the testimony, the filling of their length appears to be produced by an infinite and continuous subdivision of the subjective time, and repent of his self-embraced insignificance. Now he was a prisoner, pining and longing for life, an heir for human companionship. That was the sun outside, whose rays shone thus feebly into his dungeon by repeated reflections. Now he was a prince in disguise, meditating how to appear again and defeat the machinations of his foes. especially seeing to the eyes of his subjects that which he was not. But ever his thoughts would turn again to Ginevra, and ever the poems he devised were devised as in her presence and for her hearing. Sometimes a dread would seize him, as if the strange things were all looking at him and something was about to happen. Then he would stride hastily back to his room, close the door hurriedly, and sit down by the fire. Once or twice he was startled by the soft entrance of his landlady's granddaughter, come to search for something in it. One of the cabinets they had made a repository for small odds and ends of things. Once he told Gibbie that something had looked at him, but he could not tell what or whence or how, and laughed at himself, but persisted in his statement. He had not yet begun to read his New Testament in the way Gibbie did, but he thought in the direction of light and freedom, and looked towards some goal dimly seen in vague grandeur of betterness. His condition was rather that of eyeless hunger after growth than of any conscious aspiration towards life. He had a large and increasing delight in all forms of the generous, and shrunk instinctively from the base, but had not yet concentrated his efforts towards becoming that which he acknowledged the best, so that he was hardly yet on the straight path. I mention these things not with intent of here developing the character of Donal, but with a desire that my readers should know him such as he then was. Gibbie and he seldom talked about Ginevra. She was generally understood between them, only referred to upon needful occasion. They had no right to talk about her any more than to intrude on her presence unseasonably. Donal went to Mr. Sclater's church because Mr. Sclater required it, in virtue of the position he assumed as his benefactor. Mr. Sclater in the pulpit was a trial to Donal, but it consoled him to be near Gibbie, also that he had found a seat in the opposite gallery, whence he could see Ginevra when her place happened to be not far from the door of one of the school pews. He did not get much benefit from Mr. Sclater's sermons. I confess he did not attend very closely to his preaching, often directed against doctrinal errors of which, except for himself, not one of his congregation had ever heard, or was likely ever to hear. Gibbie was more open-hearted towards the merits of the man, with whom he was far too closely associated on weekdays not to feel affection for him, while on the other hand Gibbie made neither head nor tail of his sermons, not having been instructed, and therefore, for anything he knew, they might be very wise and good. At first he took refuge from the sermon in his New Testament, but when, for the third time, the beautiful hand of the ministerial spouse appeared between him and the book, and gently withdrew it, he saw that his reading was an offense in her eyes, and contented himself thereafter with thinking. Listening to the absolutely unintelligible, he found impossible. What a delight it would have been to the boy to hear Christ preached, such as he showed himself, such as in no small measure he had learned him. Mrs. Sclater showed herself sincere after her kind, to Donal as well as to Gibbie, but she had by no means ceased to grow, and already was slowly bettering under the influences of the New Testament in Gibbie. She told Gibbie that he must talk to Donal about his dress and his speech. That he was a lad of no common gifts was plain, she said, but were he ever so talented, he could do little in the world, certainly would never raise himself, so long as he dressed and spoke ridiculously. The wisest and best of men would be utterly disregarded, she said, if he did not look and speak like other people. Gibbie thought with himself this could hardly hold, for there was John the Baptist. He answered her, however, that Donal could speak very good English if he chose, but that the affected tone and would-be fine pronunciation of Fergus stuff had given him the notion that to speak anything but his mother tongue would be unmanly and false. As to his dress, Donal was poor, Gibbie said, and could not give up wearing any clothes, so long as there was anywhere in them. If you had seen me once, he added with a merry laugh to finish for his fingers. Mrs. Sclater spoke that if he chose to provide Donal with suitable garments, he would advance him the money. That was the way he took credit for every little sum he handed his ward, but in his accounts was correct to farthing. Gibbie would thereupon have dragged Donal at once to the tailor, but Donal was obstinate. "Nah, nah," he said, "the cloths is good enough for him, and wears them. Ye be enough for me, Sir Gilbert, already, and though I would be obliged to you, as I would to my mither herself, to cleed me gin a warna dacent, I wanna take your silver nor anybody itself to gain fine honor, I'll wear the claws sultan and weeks be better with the neist. And for that bonny woman, Mistress Flatter, ye can tell her, and by the time I hae only thing to say to the world, it wanna be my claws, auto hall folk, often hearken it, and gin she considers them, and I hae no. Our Sarah, a disgrace to her grand rooms, she mon just no invite me, and I'll no come, for I cannot presently help them. This high tone of liberty, so free from offense, either given or taken, was thoroughly appreciated by both Mr. and Mrs. Sclater, and they did not cease to invite him. A little talk with the latter soon convinced him that there was neither assumption nor lack of patriotism in speaking the language of the people among whom he found himself, and as he made her his model in the pursuit of the accomplishment, he very soon spoke a good deal better English than Mr. Sclater. But with Gibby, and even with the dainty Ginevra, he could not yet bring himself to talk anything but his mother tongue. I cannot mak my moo, he would say, to speak onything but the natural tongue o' poetry, till sic a bonny cratter as Miss Galbraith, and for yeself, Gibby, man. I'm well aware that most Scotch people of that date tried to say their prayers in English, but not so Janet or Robert, and not so had they taught their children. I fancy not a little unreality was thus in their case avoided. What will you do when you are a minister? Asked Gibby on his fingers. Me? A minister? Echoed Donald. Me? A minister? He repeated. But wouldn't you like to have a wife, Donald, and children like your father and mother? Spelt Gibby. Nah, nay, wifer. Me, Gibby, answered the philosopher. What? I either a pure schoolmaster or a shepherd, except it was made some lass, like my sister Nissy. I don't like to hear you talk like that, Donald, said Gibby. What do you say to mother? The mother's no to be said about, answered Donald. She's, and by herself, no one like other folk. When they met on a Friday evening, and it was fine, they would rove the streets, Gibby taking Donald to the places he knew so well in his childhood, and enjoying it the more that he could now tell him so much better what he remembered. The only place he did not take him to was Jink Lane, with the house that had been Mistress Crowell's. He did take him to the court in the Witty Hill, and show him the odd whoso, Galbraith, and the place under the stair where his father had worked. The shed was now gone. The neighbors had by degrees carried it away for firewood. The house was occupied, still as then, by a number of poor people, and the door was never locked, day or night, any more than when Gibby used to bring his father home. He took Donald to the garret where they had slept, one could hardly say lived, and where his father died. The door stood open, and the place was just as they had left it. Glad I was now, Sir Gilbert, said Donald, who now and then remembered Mrs. Sclater's request. They had come down, and looking at the outside of the house, had espied a half-obliterated stone carving of the Galbraith arms. Gin, I was you, Sir Gilbert. I was Master Sclater, keep a sharp look out. First chance of buying back this house. It would be a great petty, it said, gang to war afore ye get it, eh? Sick tales as this house could tell. How am I to do that, Donald? Mr. Sclater would not mind me. The money's not mine yet, you know, said Gibby. The siller is yours, Gibby, answered Donald. It's yours as the kingdom o' haven's yours. It's only that ye canna just lay your hands upon to get. The sooner you let that Sclater can at ye can what ye about, the better. And believe me, when he comes to understand at ye want that hoose cough, he'll no be a day on gain to some day or another about it. Donald was right, for within a month the house was bought, and certain necessary repairs commenced. Sometimes on those evenings they took tea with Mistress Crowell, and it was a proud time with her when they went. That night, at least, the whiskey bottle did not make its appearance. Mrs. Sclater continued to invite young ladies to the house for Gibby's sake, and when she gave a party, she took care there should be a proportion of young people in it. But Gibby, although, of course, kind and polite to all, did not much enjoy these gatherings. It began to trouble him a little, that he seemed to care less for his kind than before, but it was only a seeming, and the cause of it was this: he was now capable of receiving facts in nature and character which prevented real contact, and must make advances towards it appear as offensive. But he did not love the less that he had to content himself until the kingdom should come nearer, and with loving at a more cautious distance. By loving kindness and truth, he continued doing all he could to bring the kingdom, whose end is unity. Hence he had come to restrain his manner. Nothing could have constrained his manners, which now, from the conventional point of view, were irreproachable. But if he did not so often execute a wild dance or stand upon one leg, the glow in his eyes had deepened, and his response to any advance was as ready and thorough, as frank and sweet as ever. His eagerness was replaced by a stillness from which his eyes took all coldness, and his smile was as the sun breaking out in a gray day of summer. In this matter, there was one thing worthy of note common to Donald and him, who had had the same divine teaching from Janet. Their manners to all classes were the same. They showed the same respect to the poor, the same ease with the rich. I must confess, however, that before the session was over, Donald found it required all his strength of mind to continue to go to Mrs. Sclater's little parties. From kindness, she never asked him to her larger ones, and the more to his praise it was that he did not refuse one of her invitations. The cause was this: one bright Sunday morning in February, coming out of his room to go to church, and walking down the path through the furniture in a dreamy mood, he suddenly saw a person meeting him straight in the face. "Sick, a odd light, child," he remarked inwardly, stepped on one side to let him pass, and perceived it was himself reflected from head to foot in a large mirror, which had been placed while he was out the night before. The courage with which he persisted, after such a painful enlightenment, in going into company in those same garments was right admirable and enviable. But no one knew of it until its exercise was long over. The little pocket money Mr. Sclater allowed Gibbie was chiefly spent at the shop of a certain second-hand bookseller, nearly opposite Mistress Murkison's. The books they bought were carried to Donald's room, there to be considered by Gibbie, Donald's, and by Donald Gibbie's. Among the rest was a reprint of Marlowe Faust, the daring in the one grand passage of which both awed and delighted them. There were also some of the Ettrick Shepherd's stories, alone in their kind, and above all there was a miniature copy of Shelley, which first did much for the music of Donald's, while yet he could not quite appreciate the truth for its iridescence of it. He said it seemed to him to have been all composed in a balloon. I have mentioned only works of imagination, but it must not be supposed they had not a relish for stronger food. The books more severe came afterwards, when they had liberty to choose their own labors. Now they had plenty of the harder work provided for them. Somewhere about this time, Fergus Duff received his license to preach. In the spring, summer, and autumn, Donald labored all day with his body, and in the evening as much as he could with his mind. Lover of nature as he was, however, more alive indeed than before to the delights of the country, and the genial companionship of terrain, sights and sounds, scents and motions, he could not help longing for the winter and the city, that his soul might be freer to follow its paths. And yet, what a season some of the labors of the field afforded him for thought! Mr. Sclater, without his books, would speedily have sunk into the mere shrewd farmer. Donald, never opening a book, would have followed theories and made verses to the ends of his days. Every Saturday, as before, he went to see his father and mother. Janet kept fresh and lively, although age told on her, she said, more rapidly since Gibbie went away. "But again, the Lord, that old age, wither me up," she said. "He'll look after the cracks himself." 6 weeks of every summer, between Donald's sessions, while the minister and his wife took their holiday, Gibbie spent with Robert and Janet. It was a blessed time for them all. He led them just the life of the former days, with Robert and Oscar and the sheep, and Janet and her cow and the New Testament. Only he had a good many more things to think about now, and more ways of thinking about them. With his own hands, he built a neat little porch to the cottage door, with close sides and a second door to keep the wind off. Donald and he carried up the timber and the mortar, but although he tried hard to make Janet say what he could do for her more, he could not bring her to reveal any desire that belonged to this world, except indeed for two or three trifles for her husband's warmth and convenience. "The sight o' my lord's face," she said once, when he was pressing her, is all that I want, Sir Gibbie." They almost always called him Sir Gibbie, and he never objected or seemed either annoyed or amused at it. He took it just as the name that was his, the same way as his hair or his hands were his. He had been called wee Sir Gibbie for so long. Thank you for listening to another episode of Acresoft Story Classic.